Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The West liberal elites continue to be afflicted by Trump derangement syndrome. The very thought of Trump returning to the White House has induced a sense of panic. Can you think of a better example of Stockholm syndrome? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests. Martin Jay in Marrakesh, he's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we cross to George Samueli. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. The genesis of this program is an article that George sent me in Politico titled Trump's in Big Political Trouble, but he still is a nightmare for Europe, which, you know, I thank you, George. It was interesting reading, I suppose. The title itself kind of makes you want to think of the binary. So Europe isn't in a nightmare right now. Okay. I mean, this really astounding. Okay. The specter of Trump is haunting Europe. But one could make an argument that Europe was much better off under Trump than Biden. George.
You're absolutely right. And your response was exactly the same as mine, that the Europeans think that was a bad time, that the Trump years, when essentially Trump was saying, you know, we want to kind of bring this alliance to a kind of slow end so that you can start thinking about your own security needs and we'll think about our own security needs. And this should have been a great opportunity for Europeans, you know, finally to bring to an end essentially a dysfunctional relationship.
And yeah, indeed, 1945 was a long time ago now.
A long time ago. And it seemed, you know, when Macron famously said, I think 2017 or 2018, NATO is brain dead, that Europeans who had before used to talk about the European security and defense identity, you know, we have to do things for ourselves, you know, stop relying on Washington. This would have been a great opportunity for them to just go ahead and use Trump as an opportunity to, you know, rethink their security needs. But now, according to Politico, they're in absolute panic that Trump is coming back. And Trump is coming back means we're going to have to, you know, rethink what we're doing. Oh, no, we just want to go on doing what the Americans tell us to do. We, you know, we want to go on fighting in Ukraine. We want to go on sanctioning Russia. We want to go on, you know, in creating the possibility of a nuclear conflict. That this they regard as being that this is an idyllic state of affairs that Trump is threatening. And they said something like Biden is the most transatlanticist president since George H.W. Bush, and think what kind of a delusional world are they living in?
Well, I said in my introduction, this is like Stockholm syndrome. I mean, you worship your oppressor, okay? Because that's what it sounds like. You know, Martin, it's really interesting in the article. Obviously, it's Politico, okay? It's an organ, propaganda organ of NATO and of the Western Alliance. I mean, first and foremost, it's no surprise that Politico always breaks these stories, okay? Because they're just a stenographer for Brussels. But what's interesting in the article, to me anyway, and you as a journalist, there's no public opinion polls. There's no, you know, average Mr. and Mrs. Europe in there. It's just all political functionaries, think tankers, and all of that. I mean, there's no gauging of public opinion. But of course, they don't care about public opinion. They don't care about democracy. They don't care how the populace feels, how this conflict in Ukraine is affecting their bottom line on a daily basis. It's always elite driven, Martin.
Yeah, and the article could have had a footnote to say, and one of the reasons why we're in this mess now is because we tend to report only on the elites and only have viewpoints based on the elites on both sides of the Atlantic. I mean, you used the expression Stockholm syndrome. I have to take you to task on that. Stockholm syndrome doesn't mean that the person, the hostage themselves, actually pays cash to the terrorists who have kidnapped them. That's what you have in Europe. We're actually paying. It's not just that we are held hostage to American.
Well, it's Stockholm syndrome deluxe. Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
it's the platinum quality.
Okay. Yeah. But I think, look, I think the important point, I did read that article, and it was very much about how European elites think, and they should be worried. I don't know about the word nightmare came up, but Europe should be worried. The EU particularly should be worried. You know, first time round, we had a shock with Trump. You know, he really did upset a lot of people with his bellicose, clumsy style. And we had to acclimatize ourselves to this guy who was not a political figure. He wasn't very smooth. He wasn't very eloquent. He was literally the bull in the china shop. But now we're ready. We're prepared. We know what we're getting, you know. And I think Trump will be thinking the same thing. But this time around, we should never forget. We should never forget that the world that Trump will find himself in as president if he wins in 2024 is a very, very different world to the one that he started in January 2017 as president the first time around. You know, this new world order will mean the East, for want of a better expression, the East and its partners are much, much stronger now. So he'll be looking at Russia stronger, China, India stronger. He'll be looking at something that he probably doesn't really even understand, BRICS, you know, which will have at least 5 new members this year. Let's rattle them off. Off the top of my head, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Iran, Argentina, and Turkey. Those 5 will probably join this year. That's just this year. You know, in the year after, and maybe another 5. So that's a very much different situation that he will be in. He'll be looking at. But I think he will be looking for new partners in Europe. He's had his 4-year run before. He knows more or less the lie of the land. He won't be looking at political elites. I think he'll be looking at people like Nigel Farage in Britain, and he will probably single out Poland and Hungary as his new partners to berate and bash the European Union and NATO every given opportunity he can. There'll be kickback to that from the French and Germans.
But you could also make the argument, George, is that Trump just won't care. Okay. I mean, there's other things to do. Okay. You know, we've been babysitting you now for almost 8 decades. We've had enough. We've got other things to contend with. And it gets down to global trade, competitive advantage. I mean, no president, Trump talked about it. He wasn't able to finish his mission, but you know, you and I have talked about this for years, that the U.S. has to retool in its manufacturing if it's going to be relevant at all, okay? Because right now, the West has hegemony because of the financial system and controlling trade. But once BRICS, as Martin has brought up, you know, it's only a matter of time that when they will come up with their own currency, and then the dollar is of less importance here. Go ahead, George.
No, exactly right. And, you know, if you think back to 2016, Trump had figured out, and he'd already figured this out many years before when he was first thinking of running in the year 2000, that Russia is not America's problem, that Russia should be America's ally. And, you know, he came at it, you know, he wasn't a part of the Atlanticist establishment. He didn't care about NATO. So he'd always believed that Russia is potentially a partner to the United States. He always believed China. China is the big threat. He obviously still adheres to that. So he views the Ukraine war, he hasn't said it explicitly, but it's clear what he thinks, that this is an absolute catastrophe in that it's pitting the United States against Russia, which should be an ally of the United States. And when he comes back, he will first of all have a lot of resentment towards the Europeans, because he's seen that the Europeans are obviously much more favorably inclined towards Biden and the Democrats than they ever were toward him. He will have a lot of resentment over the British, because you know he knows all about Christopher Steele and everything that they were doing in order to sabotage his election.
And he knows he has a lot of, you know, he's going to be facing this documents gate problem in Mar-a-Lago. But he knows what the British have, okay? Yes. He threatened to release it, okay? And it was, again, the president of the United States, he was stopped by his own underlings.
That's exactly right. That's what happened during his first term. The British go, no, this will be, you know, absolutely damage our special relationship. You can't possibly release this information. He will remember all of that. And back in his first term, he tried to make make nice with the establishment, you know, the European establishment, the American establishment. Hey, I'm not really a big threat to you. He hired all those people, all the Pompeos and Mattis and the rest of them. He isn't going to do it.
Elliot Abrams came back.
Exactly. He's not going to do it this time. And I think the Europeans have woken up out of their smugness. For 2 years, they were really smug, thinking, oh, we've seen the back of Trump. And now they're realizing, no, he's coming back, and he's going to be leaner, meaner, and nastier than he was last time around.
Well, George, let's take a step back. I mean, it's neither here nor there if he's going to come back now. We're going to talk about perceptions here. But, Martin, you're absolutely right. A lot is really changed. And first of all, I don't think Trump is going to have much patience for the Europeans. He has a very different agenda. Immigration, for example, China, trade overall. And, you know, the way the Biden administration has helped degrade European industrial base, particularly Germany, I mean, it's just not going to be worth his time. And I think going forward, that's going to happen irrespective of who's in the White House. Go ahead, Martin.
He may well take a step back even further from foreign policy. He may well think that this is just a rather silly way of wasting a lot of time, and he should be focusing much more on the heart of the Republican parties, and particularly the MAGA obsessions, you know, which keep coming up. You know, it'll be anti-woke. That will be a big part of it. Immigration and America taking a bigger slice of global trade by hook or by crook. They won't really care. These will be the main focuses, I think. And, you know, the relationship between Democrats and the EU and the European Union has always been, you know, the perception is we can get along a little bit better with the Democrats because they tend to stick to previous agreements, and they're not particularly capricious. They're quite boring and predictable, whereas Republicans, they're easy to get along with and talk to, but we can't really predict wherever they'll go. And I think this will probably come through with Trump. You know, the EU just won't know what his next step will be. But I think the idea that the European Union and EU countries should start preparing now and should start thinking about now, how do we cope with Trump 2.0, you know, with what I've just said about the background of a new world order, you know, how will he react? He will try and divide and rule Europe. I'm sure he will, you know, and I think the kickback from the French, particularly from Macron, will be to push even harder with this new idea of taking away the veto block voting system to go to majority voting, so that countries like Hungary can no longer stop us progressing, in inverted commas, you know, with such ideas about the Ukraine war. But he'll want to pull out of Ukraine. The idea will be very much...
Well, I mean, it's very interesting. We have to go to a break here, but it's very interesting how Trump will be able to use dissent within the European Union to further American interests. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
In 2022, the Italian government approved a package of military aid to Ukraine in coordination with the EU and NATO
to help Ukrainians defend themselves and fight back.
About 150 million euros worth.
American weapons, even atomic bombs, are here in Italy.
All the same, NATO and the US politicians and want that people will die just for make money.
E quando arrivai a Donetsk trovai una situazione terrificante, una città completamente svuotata, una città di circa 2 milioni di abitanti che era completamente svuotata.
Мой самый большой позор то, что Европа закрыла глаза.
Opinion polls show that over 70% of Italians are against military support for Ukraine.
Stiamo parlando di un confronto diretto fra la NATO, di fatto, e la Russia.
L'opinione pubblica è molto schierata in questo momento in Occidente, tutti dalla parte dell'idea secondo cui la Russia sia il male assoluto e l'Occidente sia il bene assoluto. Mi sembra una visione infantile della realtà.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. This is the Crosstalk Bullhorns edition. All right, let's go back to George. George, talking about what's changed since January 2017 to the present. Well, one thing that it seems quite irreversible, and the Democrats and their colleagues in the European Union have succeeded in creating a huge wedge, an irreversible wedge, dividing the United States from Russia, and thus, because of the Stockholm syndrome, Europe from Russia. That is the biggest single change. That's not going to, that never, even if Trump makes it back to the White House, too much has happened. There's not going to be any kind of reconciliation. The best we could probably hope for is a very, very cold and ugly Cold War. George.
Well, I think that's very likely. On the other hand, you always have to think about Trump, if he actually does make moves towards bringing this thing to an end, after all, that's what he's promised. That's you know, his the one election promise that he continues to repeat. I will end this in 24 hours. So he's going to have to do something to make that happen. Now, once he does that, we know that the political security establishment in the United States will go into high gear to try to stop him, and
they'll impeach him.
They will impeach him, and then you've also got the European political establishment, which is also will be in panic mode. That they'll also, you know, see whatever they can do in order to stop him. And there are indications of that in that political article, that there already some kind of collusion between European politicians and political figures on the Hill to make sure that somehow Trump cannot do anything drastic like withdraw from NATO or withdraw assistance from Ukraine. So right away, you're setting up a political crisis almost from the beginning. I mean, that this is going to be the huge issue. And then again, you know, if they'll impeach him, I mean, he will probably survive. And then he'll go against Europe again. His problem in Europe is that he doesn't have too many allies at the moment. Yes, he obviously has Viktor Orban, who's explicitly come out in favor of him. Farage is obviously a Trumpian, but it's hard to see where Farage goes. I mean, he's not, you know, he's not standing as far as we can see in the next election. So now that could change. I mean, there might be, you know, waverers who will go with Trump. Since he's the election winner, so they're going to go with him. But at the moment, he will have a recalcitrant Europe, but that might not displease him. He'll say, "Good, you know, I don't need these buggers."
I think and particularly, I mean, depending on how the situation in Ukraine evolves, I mean, a Trump presidency will just do this: wipe our hands. Okay, I mean, of course, that will still lead to some form of impeachment, but I mean, it will put Europe on notice: is that if you want to resolve your security problems on your continent, you better take care of it. Okay, and I think that will shift a lot of people. But what it will do is it will create a huge chaos inside of NATO itself. Maybe Trump wants that. I remember talking with you, George, you know, either Trump is completely ignorant of what the alliance is about in its history, or he's playing five-dimensional chess. I think you remember those conversations. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You've nailed it. But I think the panic is probably coming from NATO itself. It's probably coming from member states of NATO. You know, wondering what the hell are we going to do if he goes ahead with any of these ideas that he has. If you look back in the newspaper archive and remember the first time he came to Europe, that infamous NATO summit where he pushed a couple of world leaders aside to very quickly get in front of the crowd for that photo. I mean, it's hilarious.
Was it Slovenia? George, finally correct.
I think it was the president of Montenegro. I think it was
Montenegro. Okay. All right. Okay. But the point is that I think that this rebalancing there will be a certain rebalancing in this new world order between America and Europe. And I think Trump may not have to go that far and cancel the Ukraine war. He may well just simply say to the Europeans, look, we spent much too much money on our side, and now it's your turn. So you have a choice. You know, we're not going to spend another $100 billion a year in military aid for these people in a war that we don't believe in, when I've got voters, a lot of voters in my camp, saying spend money on poverty, spend money on jobs. You know, it may well be that the Europeans will be pushed into this ultimatum whereby they will have to seriously think about spending much more than 2% of GDP, you know, much, much more, or simply cut their losses and get out of this stupid war.
Okay, Martin, already the what we call the welfare state is under threat in Europe, okay? I mean, austerity, well, almost kind of a permanent state of austerity. And now they want to up defense spending. How tenable that is that in Europe, in your opinion? How tenable? At the end of the day, to both of you, where are they going to get the young men that want to fight these wars? Unless that's the intent to bring in Moldova so you can have the Moldovan army fighting NATO's wars. Martin.
Yeah, I think it will. What will happen is that Europeans will say that's not realistic, particularly with a number of key elections coming up, particularly European Union elections in 2024, where the EU is already preparing itself to be massively hammered. I think the result will be that there'll be a lot of back channel diplomacy between Europe and America and NATO, and inevitably there will be a peace process. There will be talks with Putin, and Putin will have to, the West will have to accept that the territories that Putin has now are going to stay his. And the payoff, I suppose, will be Ukraine getting NATO membership. That one may be part of the whole deal, you know. But look, Trump he's going to U-turn on so much. He's going to settle so many scores when he gets into office in the first few months. And you're quite right. He may well not have any of these EU member states and their elites in his sights because they're just, you know, not particularly important to the bigger picture. But he's going to U-turn on the Paris climate, of course, and which is going to make him hugely unpopular in the European Union. You know, and he's going to invest in fossil fuels in America. And on the foreign policy circuit, he may well do it light. But the Israelis are rubbing their hands and hoping and waiting. When he gets back in, he's our only ally with our completely crackpot idea of hitting Iran, because even the Saudis aren't going anywhere near that idea anymore. So that's it in a nutshell. You know, I think he's not going to make any friends in Europe, but it may well not matter. It may well be a deal we can all work with. But he is certainly obsessed with rebalancing this global deal, not just in military spending, but in actually how we do business with the European Union. Don't forget, the EU's been hit really hard by a lot of tax incentives that the Biden administration has created for American businesses, which they say are completely unfair, one of which is called rather awkwardly an IRA tax incentive. So when he comes into power, he will be facing a lot of angry Europeans who now I think...
Talking about the anger, going back to my original question, I mean, how much bouncing around and ricocheting can Europe go with American hegemony? I mean, again, you know, if it's not a nightmare now, I can't imagine how it can get much worse, okay? And this is under Biden right now. I mean, and then, you know, we have to look at, you know, Politico, for them, the most dreaded thing is populism, obviously. And anytime they mention populism, Hitler's coming back, Mussolini is moving in. Okay, they always go to the extremes here. But then, you know, with this hot cold relationship with the United States, it's becoming very dysfunctional going forward here. There isn't a populist opportunity, and European elites, political, and everybody else is terrified of that. George.
Yeah, no question. And I think that's the article revealed it, that what they are dreading is the popular opinion making itself felt, because this war, it's been obvious for a long time, this war is not popular in Europe. Yeah. So all of the things that, you know, we hear about, the Europeans will be unhappy about this, the Europeans are unhappy about that. Yes. The European elites, you know, they worry about fossil fuels. You know, they're preoccupied with net zero, but the public in Europe is not. And the European elites, he's going to abandon Ukraine. Well, the public is not interested in that. And the issue of immigration, well, again, you know, this is the kind of thing the Politico doesn't want to take any interest in, how the European public feels about essentially migrants continuing to pour into the continent. So, you know, Trump is a nightmare of elites. And there's nothing really new about that, because European elites have always dreaded that an American president is going to come in and say, this is nuts. You know, why are we on the hook for these very rich, lazy states that don't want to pay for their own military and expect us not only to bail them out, but to risk the destruction of our cities for their sake, and they don't even want to cough up any money. I mean, they're always worried about this. I mean, you know, this for years and years that we're going to get some kind of a populist. This time they may get it.
Martin, why isn't there a radical rethink in Europe? Because why does everything have to revolve around who's in the White House? I mean, it just seems like such a patronistic view of themselves. I mean, again, you know, I'll invoke it. You know, we don't need future historians to tell us why. We need psychiatrists, because I don't understand. If everything is incumbent upon who's sitting, what person is sitting in the White House, then Europe is obviously doing something wrong. It's not a poor place.
Yeah, but unfortunately, for so long now, you know, we have suffered from the Stockholm syndrome. We have looked, you know, I was in Brussels for 11 years, and the foreign policy enclaves of the entire architecture, probably the most important one, the Foreign Affairs Committee in the European Parliament, are basically more or less in the pocket of the Americans. They have a default position, which is, if we don't have a clear opinion on something, go with America. And that accounts for a lot. From Israel to you know, to conflicts all around the world, how we handle Africa. I mean, Africa right now, look what's happening in Africa. We are seeing the emergence of a real new Cold War. You know, you have these three countries in the center of the Sahel, you know, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali, who are now friends of Russia, who have completely rejected French and EU and Western hegemony, you know, and the world is changing. And I think the European Union, you know, it probably is going to do the only thing it can possibly do under such scenario, with a new, angrier and more bellicose, more irreverent Trump, which is to impose more tariffs. So you're going to have a trade war. This is inevitable. It's absolutely inevitable. And that's why Politico is writing about this, because it's worried that that's the inevitable path we're going to go to, because there are no other default positions. The EU is not dynamic.
Gentlemen, we've run out of time, but George, I think you agree with me that the colonial powers just can't help but flex their muscles. That's their default position. Okay. All right, gentlemen, I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Marrakesh, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RTC. And next time, remember, crosstalk rules.